and welcome to The Preservationists, the monthly radio show for fans of local historic architecture, the history of unique buildings, and the people from our community working to preserve and restore them. I'm Astronomus Ray, the host of The Preservationists. Today, we're diving into one of Astoria's oldest and most celebrated traditions, the Astoria Regatta. Long before it became the hometown festival we know of it today, the regatta was one of the more maritime celebrations on the Pacific coast, drawing visitors from across the Northwest and beyond. It helped establish Astoria as a destination, boosted the local economy, and reflected the city's pride in its maritime heritage. Joining us today is Lori Serafin, who has spent time exploring the fascinating history of the Astoria Regatta from the beginnings through its spectacular early years to its disappearance during World War I and the influenza pandemic, and its revival in the 1930s. Along the way, we'll hear stories about regatta queens, civic celebrations, salmon derbies, powerboat races, and the people who kept this beloved tradition alive. Lori, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, this lecture that we're talking about with the Astoria Regatta, essentially, this is something that you actually have prepared for an event that LCPS has been hosting, which is LCPS Presents. Now, to give our listeners a little bit of context and background, can you tell me a little bit about that lecture series?
Eric Wheeler, another board member, and I are actively planning and hosting LCPS Presents. It's a lecture series that's given on the first or the second Tuesday of the month at Pacific Distillery here in Astoria. The distillery is based in the old Astoria Wharf and Warehouse. It's a historic building on the historic register, and it's owned by Steve Ficht, and he has a distillery there. And so it's a nice place to have a lecture. Our capacity is about 50 to 60 people, and you can sit back, enjoy a lecture, and have a cocktail.
Very nice. And with these lecture series, it seems that every month you have a new topic with that, and you've covered a variety of topics so far.
Right. Last year was a great year. We started out with the early years of Astoria Regatta, and we did presentations on fur trading. What else? Oh, Emil Schott.
Lighthouses,
yeah. A wide variety of topics, because we try to find something that everyone is interested in.
With this upcoming one, you're kicking off the season again, which is great because you guys usually go on a little hiatus during the summertime. Yes. And because it rolls through the academic year.
Right. We're tied to the academic year. So we generally take June and July off, and we start in August and end in May.
Now, the beginning of August, to kick off the series again, we're talking about the Astoria Regatta.
Again.
But we're looking at a different section.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about these specific years and why they were chosen in specific?
Okay. Last year, I did the early years of the Astoria Regatta, which is its inception in 1894 to 1916 when it ended. And it ended because of World War I, the influenza outbreak, the disastrous fire in downtown Astoria in December of 1922, there was no downtown to have a celebration in for several years. And then the stock market crash and the economic depression. So there was a hiatus. And then Regatta started up again in 1932 and went to 1941 and ended because of World War II. And there was another hiatus.
Yeah.
So we're covering the middle years of Regatta. That's what I'm calling it.
It's the middle years with that. And the history of this middle year period is pretty significant because, you know, we're coming out of this time frame of the Regatta kind of being on a pause. So this is, in a way, a revitalization or an attempt at one, you know, to try to get things kind of going back to what would attract people in.
Right. And it took a year. The organizing committee that started Regatta organized in the fall of 1931. And this was the founding of the Astoria Yacht Club. And the club's central purpose was to reestablish Regatta. And they chose to do that September 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of 1932. So it was a very ambitious project.
And this kind of differs a little bit in the past when before, you know, the regatta years were more in like a July area.
They were July or August or September. Mm-hmm. It varied, and I can't figure out what the pattern is.
Yeah, because it's been ever changing. So looking kind of at the beginning of what the Astoria Regatta is, for listeners out there that may have never actually heard about what a regatta is, what is this celebration with maritime history?
Regatta is a celebration of maritime history, and so we want to show how much the river means to us, because Astoria is about the river. We are here because the river is here. And so we're celebrating sailboat races, boat races. We have a royalty court. We have a parade. We have fundraisers.
So when we think about the actual specific events that took place from 1894 to 1916, how did things change from the previous years when we first looked at the beginning?
I consider the early years of the Astoria Regatta kind of the glory years. It was huge. Thousands of visitors poured into town, and boats came from all over the Pacific Rim to participate in all the events, whether it be powerboat racing, sailboat racing, tests of strength, log rolling, foot races, swimming across the river, whatever. And it was very big. It was very important. Regatta queens were usually the creme de la creme of Astoria or Portland society. Very different than now. It was big, very social, very important.
Yeah. And with the revitalization, one thing that I wanted to kind of like touch base about is when we think about like coming back to Regatta, was it as big as it was in previous years?
In the middle years. It's much smaller. Yeah. It has turned into a smaller civic celebration, maybe more local, except for a few years where they would have some Pacific Coast powerboat racing championships. They would draw from like the whole Pacific Coast for the outboard hydroplane races or something, mm-hmm. or the Pacific Coast log rolling championships. But otherwise, it's pretty local.
And that's pretty interesting to kind of see that change of it, because obviously we're coming out of depression, so not a lot
of people. We're in the depression.
We're in the depression, so a lot of people are, you know, not really out and about, we'll say.
No.
When we think about some of the actual events that took place in the first year of that regatta, what did that look like? Like, what type of events were we doing and how did things differ?
Okay, so typically, regatta is 3 days. There's a kickoff and it's the coronation of the queen, that's very important. And then there's a limited run of events that day. Typically, maybe some sailboat races, some powerboats, tests of strength, that kind of thing. And then there's some kind of social event in the evening, perhaps the dance or the coronation ball. And so 1932 was no exception. And then the next day is a full day of racing and contests. So we have the unlimited hydroplanes. We have the outboard hydroplanes. We have one design sailboat racing. We have handicap sailboat racing, racing between the military man of wars, baseball games, a 4-H festival, and a regatta ball. And then the third day is a little bit more limited as far as scope of events, but finishes up with a grand sea parade. And maybe the Admiral Ball, the awarding of the prizes to all the winners of all these contests. And in 1932, the Portland Yacht Club had a fleet formation and did a parade with the U.S. Coast Guard. So that must have been very special for PYC.
Of course it was, yes. And when we think about the actual changes that went on, one interesting story that you had previously told me was of the Regatta Queen of this first year. So this is a really unique story because back then they were votes based off of popularity. You would mm-hmm. buy votes.
Yes.
You told me that Simmons.
Mm-hmm. Marie Simmons.
Marie Simmons.
Yes.
Won with how many votes?
2 million votes.
Wow.
Okay. So in 1916, when Regatta ended, there was a firm establishment of a process of Regatta Queen election where votes were purchased because it was a fundraiser. Regatta always struggled financially, and so it was a fundraising arm. Buy votes, get money, it goes to Regatta, they can put on the show. So in 1932, they decided, let's do that again. Votes were purchased by the public. Okay, you could get 50 votes for 1 cent, and I think that this is a product of the Depression. You're getting a lot of votes for your penny.
Yes.
The contest opened on July 15th and continued for a month. It was managed by the American Legion because the winner would get to represent the American Legion in the Portland American Legion Parade the following month. And they said all young women were encouraged to enter the contest. So Marie Simmons Mrs. Marie Simmons won the contest with 2 million votes. That's about $400 of votes. The newspaper describes her as blonde, and she had the backing of the Liberty Grill, where she was employed. She was a waitress, and the Liberty Grill was at 11th and Commercial in the Cook Building. I think there's a vape shop there now in that location. Interestingly enough, I can't find any pictures of Marie Simmons. I hope to by the time of the lecture in August. But she was not the Golden Society girl that the Regatta Committee wanted. And she was not really celebrated in the way that regatta queens were in the early years, or even later in what I'm calling the middle years. I'm thinking she was very popular. So she must have been well known in the community. But ironically, this is the last year there was a popular election for the regatta queen. They quit that. So the next year, the regatta committee ditched that popular election process, and they chose Miss Eleanor Norblad, 19 years of age, the daughter of the ex-governor, to be regatta queen. And to this date, there have been no popular elections of regatta queens. They have always been chosen by committee.
So that ended in 1932, 31?
Right.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, yeah.
No more populism.
No, apparently not. That's amazing. So, I mean, in a way, she kind of stood out from that time frame specifically, just as, you know, it was a unique story. And then they changed the process right after.
Right. She was, well, she's married. She's like 26, 27 years old. She's married to a Coast Guard mechanic. She's not from a Clatsop Pioneer family. She's not from wealthy parents or heritage. She is just, you know, she's a middle class waitress.
Well, that's pretty amazing to kind of see that kind of shift of things. And then how did that affect the next year? We obviously got picked the Norblad, but was there any other prominent regatta queens from here on?
Oh, yes. And, you know, when I go through the lists of regatta queens, I recognize the names, but I'm also a student of Astoria history.
Of course. So, yes.
So, yes, but they have a history. They've lived in Astoria most of their lives. They're very well known. Their parents are well connected. They're very wealthy.
Now, yeah, no, that's a really great, interesting story. And when we think a little bit about other time periods of the regatta, I did want to take listeners back to this time period. How would you describe this type of regatta to somebody if we were there right now and today?
I think it would be very folksy in a way. And
very,
I think,
small
town. It would be very small townish. I think you would be shocked at the level of technologies. When you are looking at powerboat racing,
yes,
in particular, it would be very interesting, because we think of like the unlimited hydroplane racing circuits, glory years is the 50s and 60s, but this is the 30s.
Yes.
And this is a whole nother thing. We have two types of hydroplanes. We have the unlimited class, and then we have the outboard class, where you have your outboard motor mounted on the back of your vessel to race.
And then they go fast.
They go fast. Yeah. The outboard hydroplanes could average speeds of just over 50 miles an hour, and the unlimiteds can do about 70.
It's amazing.
This is the early 30s.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Completely new technology. And I feel like it's interesting to think about that time frame of that advancement. And then in terms of like actual boating in that sense, we have those hydroplanes coming in. Was there any other new forms of like events or boats that were happening were new?
There's some formations of one design fleets, where there's a one design that came out of Seattle. It was designed to be very safe for beginners and youths that are learning to sail, because there's flotation built in the deck so it can't sink. And they're commonly called flatties. And they had an active fleet racing scene from 1928 to 1955. The boat's also called a Geary 18, so because it's 18 feet in length. And so that very popular race out there.
Yeah, and they look a lot more like sailboats.
They are sailboats. Yeah.
Okay.
They're fractional rig sloops.
Yes.
Hard chine hull. And that makes it very easy to build. And so for $100, you could probably buy enough wood and construct one of these and go out and sailboat race. It's very accessible.
When we think about this time frame, how is this Astoria Regatta different from other ones? Because we describe this one as more folksy, a little bit more small town, community oriented. But what would make this special? You know, when we think about what makes this truly stand out, like what kept this traditional life? Was there anything grand about this time?
Well, it is the Depression, and there is a lack of resources. But that also means there's not a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah.
And so that makes this event very special.
Yes, because it's pretty much the only outing you probably could go to.
Well, it's one of the big ones.
The big
ones. Yeah.
When we think about what makes the Astoria Regatta history special and unique to our maritime background, how can we connect this to Astoria? Because we have a very rich history of maritime when we think about Astoria. There's just plenty of history to go off from there. But how does this all connect? Because this is the formation of the Astoria Yacht Club. That's the big key point of that. That's why they originally started. But is there any other connecting ties to this maritime history with the Astoria Regatta and how that continued and thrived during the Depression?
I think that other towns, jurisdictions, cities had their own events. Like Seattle has Seafair. Portland has the Rose Festival. The Pendleton has their roundup. Every small town has some kind of civic celebration, and many of them have royalty and they have parades, and we all network. You know, like our regatta queen would go to Portland and be in the Rose Parade or go up to Seafair. One year, the Pendleton Roundup queen was our regatta queen in 1960.
Yeah. Amazing.
It was a trifecta.
Yeah.
I think she was queen of the Portland Rose Festival that year, too. It was very weird. It was kind of a weird situation. But I think that in this network of civic celebrations, Astoria represents the maritime one.
Absolutely.
Because of our history and heritage.
We'll return back to our interview with Lori Serafin about the middle years of the Astoria Regatta in just a moment. I'd first like to tell you a little bit about all the events happening for the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS, for the month of July. Join us at our Astoria Tool Lending Library. It's now open for business. The Tool Library will be open 2:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. every Sunday, or by appointment. Feel free to stop in and learn about the program or donate some tools. We have several member-only events going on this summer. LCPS members are invited to two exclusive private events this summer. Space is limited, so they will RSVP. If you're interested in joining LCPS, be sure to join at www.lcpsociety.org and click on our membership tab, and we can get you set up with the membership. The member events that are going on will be a private tour of the Flavelle House, as well as a summer social gathering at a historical home. For more information, visit www.lcpsociety.org to find out more about our organization and what other offerings we have. Now returning back to our interview with Lori Serafin about the middle years of the Astoria Regatta. Lori, I wanted to pick up again on 1934 and what the happenings were during that time frame.
The 1934 regatta was kind of in conjunction with the 1934 Pacific Coast Outboard Hydroplane Championships. And so this attracted 60 of the best drivers and their boats on Young's Bay. The course was 1 mile, and the average speed was over 50 miles an hour. Woohoo!
Yeah.
4 new world records were set. The fleet was fairly well dominated by the boats from Seattle, which is kind of a hotbed of hydroplane technology at the time. So that was a big, big deal, because we got people, you know, from not just locally, Pacific Coast, supporting all the outboard hydroplane. Let's see. And what, in 1936, we actually, here locally in Astoria, had one of the top women log rolling people. And so the Pacific Coast Amateur Log Rolling Championships was held in conjunction with the 1936 regatta. Our champion was Sylvia Winters, and she grew up on Young's Bay, and she learned how to walk on logs from an early age. She was called Miss Paul Bunyan. She performed at regatta, and she defeated all the other competitors, including her own brother.
Amazing.
And she went on to compete in the national championships in Michigan in 1938, and she was runner-up.
And when we, just to give listeners a visual, that's walking on a log in water.
Right. There's two people on a log, and they're trying to force the other one to fall off.
Yep.
And it's quite a feat of athleticism.
Very different than maybe what we would do in present day time.
Right. And there was also the 4-H.
Yeah, the 4-H is also a unique one.
And the Clatsop County Fair was sometimes held at the same time with regatta on the same weekend. You know, compacting events and
community oriented.
Right. It just wasn't on the water. And there were land contests. All
was there still like axe throwing during this time?
Oh, I can't remember if I've seen axe throwing, but you know, there's foot races. Mm-hmm. There's like, you know, three-legged races.
Right. And like strength ones.
Yeah. Sure. What do you call it? Track and field events.
Yeah. The fun stuff.
Non-water activities.
Absolutely. If you were to look at a newspaper from the time periods that you were looking at, what might people find in the newspaper about the regatta? Like, what type of articles were out there?
Oh, it's everything's always over the top, you know. It's the most thrilling schedule. It's the best regatta ever.
You had
very
showed
superlative.
Me a pamphlet.
Yes.
From the Astoria Regatta that kind of explained a small thing. So salmon.
The Salmon Derby.
It's a very interesting event because it took up 3 pages of a trifold.
Yes.
Now, what was it? What is Salmon Derby?
What is Salmon Derby?
And let's start there.
Okay. So Salmon Derby is a fishing contest where you go out on the water and there's a set of rules, and man or woman, boy or girl, whoever gets the biggest fish by weight wins the contest. And the prize money was large, especially considering it's the Depression. So in 1937, they had Salmon Derby for the first time, and it was held after regatta. Big success. Everyone loved it. It attracted visitors from all over. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to promote tourism. So the next year, Salmon Derby was held in regatta. It was one of the events. Mm-hmm. So there was less racing. You're talking about the pamphlet that was made to promote regatta. And it's a pamphlet that has 4 pages. And 3 pages of it are devoted to Salmon Derby, just showing how important it was. And like in 1941... when they had Salmon Derby, the top prize was $500. That's a lot of money, about $11,000 today in equivalency. And the guy was a Finnish logger. I believe he was from Napton. And he caught a 45-pound Chinook. So Salmon Derby takes a larger and larger role in regatta. And even after the hiatus, because regatta started again in 1948, Salmon Derby is huge. And Salmon Derby remains huge in the 50s and into the 60s.
What do you think was the big appeal about Salmon Derbies?
Anybody could participate. All you needed was a boat and a fishing pole.
And some luck. Yeah.
And there's pictures of Salmon Derby on the river, and it looks like you can almost walk across the river on boats. There are so many little fishing boats out there.
Yeah. Yes. It's pretty amazing to hear about how in the 1930s they were able to keep this regatta alive, despite all those challenges and multiple hiatuses.
In a really challenging economic environment, money was tight in the 30s. In fact, in the 1933 regatta, the city of Astoria said, we can't help fund regatta. And they published it in the paper like 6 weeks before the event. And that must have been a real blow to the Astoria Yacht Club group. And so 9 days later in the paper, Astoria Yacht Club publishes a piece in the paper that says, we're just going to give photographs of the prizes to our winners because we can't afford to buy trophies.
Yeah, so you would get a photo of a trophy as your prize.
Yes. That shows you how determined they were to get this event off the ground.
And it's also, it's an interesting point of view, too, because if you're even participating in these things, you know that you're not going to get an actual trophy. You're just getting a photo. But you still show up and compete anyways because you want to be there.
Well, there is some prize money.
Oh, okay. Well, then, oh, that changes a little bit.
But, you know, a trophy's nice.
Yeah, a photo of a trophy's fine, you know.
Well, it's a little cheesy, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, if... There are financial realities to civic events, and Astoria Regatta has been plagued by fiscal challenges through the years. And you even see this in the glory years of Astoria Regatta. You see it in the papers, you know. We need more money. Merchants, you need to contribute. Public, you need to buy those buttons or contribute. This is important. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Yeah. Whereas more like a big fundraiser.
Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting. Well, can you give us a tiny bit of context without revealing everything about what's happening in the next years of Regatta from this time period?
Me after 41?
41.
Okay.
After 1941.
Yes. You know, there is the hiatus. World War II. Remember that we had mines.
Oh, yeah.
Water.
And it's a big thing.
We were at war, and we had an influx of military personnel. The population of Astoria doubled. No, Regatta wasn't happening.
Right.
But when it starts up again in 48, it retains a lot of its local character. Salmon Derby is very important. Powerboat racing is very important. Sailboat racing, less so.
So interesting. So... Well, I am so glad that we keep this tradition alive. Is there anything you're looking forward most to this year's regatta?
Well, I'm always looking forward to my lecture because I enjoy lecturing and I enjoy the education process and I enjoy the people that I meet there.
Yes.
But I do enjoy going to the Liberty Theater, to the selection of the Queen. I mean, part of that's the heritage of my house, too, because I live in a Regatta Queen's house.
Yes, Allie Forstrom.
Allie Forstrom, yes.
Yes. Always great.
So I really do enjoy that, and I enjoy watching the young women, that because typically I met them the year before, and it's really fun to see how poised and polished and how much they've matured.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
And the parade.
Yeah, the parade's fun.
Who doesn't love a small town parade?
We all love them.
It's great stuff.
So what time should we be at Pacific Distillery? What day? And anything else to know about that?
The lecture starts at 7. I would encourage people to be there between 6 and 6:15. Grab a seat, socialize, have a cocktail, have dinner if you like, and come hang out. Because it's not just a lecture. It's also a social event.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing. And I appreciate you being on again.
Thank you so much.
A special thanks to Lori Serafin for being a guest on this month's episode of The Preservationists. The Preservationists airs every third Tuesday of the month on KMUN at 9:30 a.m. I'd like to extend a special thanks to the team here at KMUN, the members, volunteers, and staff of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and a special thanks to Camilla Swerdlaw for producing the theme song for The Preservationists. The Preservationist is a production of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society for KMUN, written and produced by Astronomus Wright. I'm Astronomus Wright, and remember, when it comes to preservation, anyone can be a preservationist. Thank you for listening.